Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are indeed tonight's entertainment. Welcome to another edition of AMP Radio, presented by the AMP Radio Network. This one we like to call Proteus's Primetime. I'm your host, Proteus, and tonight I am lucky enough to be joined by a very good friend, Pat. Danny Ostrin _9. Of course, you guys recognize this voice from previous shows. If you don't, welcome to it. This is Danny Ostrin. Danny, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great, man. Feeling pumped to an act. It's been about a month since we talked, maybe a little bit longer. So I'm here in sort of cloudy, very humid Dallas, and excited to talk fights with you, man.
Absolutely, and I hadn't let the audience know yet. That's right, you are coming to us live and direct from the host city of UFC 211, Austin, Texas. How are the mean streets treating you?
You said Austin. We are very much in Dallas. So far, so good.
That's hilarious. Sorry about that.
Enjoying it. It's certainly been an interesting week. Dallas is a big city, so the media is not quite as centered kind of on one hotel or one area as we are in some of the other places, but had a good time. Saw Cold Coffee and Morgan last night and, got some dinner with them and Adam Hill and Heidi Fang from Las Vegas Review Journal, and Matt Wells was there as well. Stuff's been going well. It's always fun to be back and get a little kick in the ass and, get pumped up to be doing what we do.
That's funny because in my notes, I had Dallas written down. And of course I said Austin because I got Austin, Texas on the mind. Apparently I do apologize about that. So you saw Wellesley last night. Say hi to him for me because, since he started his podcast, I haven't been able to get a hold of him. I'm just saying, might be big time in me.
I will actually tell you, Wells has a lot going on outside of the MMA stuff right now. So I think that probably has less to do with him starting the podcast and more to do with the fact that he's pretty much working until, 9:30 every night these days and just kind of on the grind, hustling away. So I would not take that personally.
No, of course I wasn't. I was just trying to push his podcast, but that's all right. So let's start out with what you said, Danny. We haven't had you on the airwaves for about a month, and that's because, of course, as we mentioned the last time we talked to you, you were going to go on vacation to Africa. So just quickly, bring us up to speed on that. How was it?
Oh, man, it was a trip of a lifetime, and I say that sincerely. It was just one of the best 3 weeks of my life. It was super inspiring. I was in Swaziland, Mozambique, and South Africa, and the whole trip, I can't wait to get back. I mean, seriously, I'm trying to save my money already because it's just such a beautiful, inspiring area of the world, and I learned a lot. Saw a lot of animals, met a lot of people, learned about sort of, the efforts to prevent HIV, which may not be what everyone does on vacation, but it was really interesting and, went to some of those beautiful beaches in the world, the whole thing. I mean, it just couldn't have been a better time. And, I think sometimes you need that a little bit, right? Just get a totally different perspective on the world and the people who live in it. And that's kind of how I feel. It was great.
Absolutely. And I was looking at a lot of the pictures that you're posting, not only on Twitter, but also on your Instagram. And it looked like a wonderful, beautiful place. You're surrounded by beautiful water, beautiful beaches, and of course, beautiful people, it seemed like.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, Africa's a place that I'd always dreamt of going to, but I really didn't have, I couldn't have predicted that I was going to have as wonderful a time as I did. It really is inspiring to be there, and there's just something about it. It's a little more beautiful than the rest of the world, in my opinion. And, you know, I did do the beaches thing, but I also, my sister works for a family planning organization that is very heavily involved in the efforts to prevent HIV. So I wasn't just lying on beaches. There was a lot more to it than that, but I swear on my life, if you can ever get to the beaches in Mozambique, you can't even imagine how beautiful they are. And it's kind of one of those last places where you don't have just stampedes of tourists at every beach. So highly recommend that, but also highly recommend Swaziland, checking out the zebras, checking out, you know, all the animals. It truly is. It's the coolest place I've ever been. So.
Yeah, there's a YouTube blogger that I follow. His name, goes by the name of Fun for Louie, and he spends a lot of time in Africa, not only in South Africa, but they have traveled along, like you said, to Swaziland and such like that. So I know what you're saying, not only from your pictures, but from what I've seen from his vlogs, it's a beautiful place. And yes, I don't blame you for wanting to spend or save up your money and head back there as soon as you can. Okay, so. This is the way I saw this week, Danny. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, because you've been there on the ground for most of the week for Fight Week. I saw this Fight Week mainly as a calamity of errors for the MMA's NFL, so to speak. And you just tell me where you want to start. First of all, we had the UFC, and this wasn't really this week, but last week we had the UFC come out with. They announced that they were going to start a women's 125-pound division. Then, of course, they said, no, we're not. And then this week, they did announce again that they are, in fact, going to start a women's 125 division. Also, at the beginning of this week, we had the UFC president not knowing which Brazilian lady was actually fighting for the 115-pound belt, which I thought was very embarrassing for them, from my point of view. Of course, last night we had the news break that GSP is no longer going to fight Bisping, and maybe that came from the pressure from Luke Rockhold coming out on the MMA Hour and speaking up against the company. Maybe not, but it just seems like a bit of a coincidence. And then, of course, we've got Cejudo falling off the card, Alvarez not being on the main card. So you just tell me where you want to start, and we'll go ahead and dive into this week that was.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I hadn't, like you mentioned it before the show, just when people kind of went down what you might want to talk about, and I hadn't sort of looked at them all together until you said it and until you kind of just ran it down. I didn't have that sense of this being a calamity, in part because I've covered enough UFC events that you know, this just kind of feels like almost business as usual, especially in this, right. In this era of new ownership. But you're right. I mean, it has been a weird week, and there just has been, you know, one thing after another. I mean, in terms of where we should start, I mean, I guess we kind of have to start with Bisping GSP, right?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we owe it to our Canadian fans to start with that one.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a calamity. I mean, I didn't hate the fight as much as everyone else did. I thought it made no sense, but I think I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and accepted that this is the new MMA, but particularly UFC world that we live in. And, you know, I was excited to see GSP back, so Bisping. And, I mean, for all this talk about waiting until November, it's worth noting that GSP did say the day that the fight was announced that he wouldn't be ready until after the summer. What's weird is it almost feels as if Dana or whoever at the UFC just never asked George when he was going to be ready and just assumed that it would be for July, which is ridiculous. But, like, how did this happen? I mean, how did they hold a major press conference during a fight week on the Friday, you know, get international media paying attention, and then 2 months later just announce it like, no, they're not doing it? I mean, it just feels so unprofessional. And it's going to lead to, I mean, I'm assuming that we're going to get Romero and Bisping announced for UFC 213 tomorrow. They've got the summer kickoff press conference. But now all anyone's going to be asking Bisping about instead of Romero for the next month and a half, 2 months, is GSP. The whole thing, it's embarrassing. I can't believe that it happened. And it was, a crazy fight to start with, but it's even crazier the way this all went down and how it just overshadows so much. And, I mean, I think part of why you're saying it's – or not why you're saying it's a calamity, but part of why this all feels like such a calamity, and I like that word, is this fight card this weekend is so good, so great. And, this should have been the moment where it felt as if the UFC's 2017 bleeding stopped a little bit because we just had a great fight card and we could celebrate that. But that's not what we're – instead, that's not what we're talking about. And, I mean, how disappointing is that? I mean, it just felt like we needed a good week for the sport and everything was set up and then all this crap happens. So, but I mean, I don't think – did you even – I don't think if you noted Jessica Penne, obviously. I mean, that's not the biggest story in the world, but she also popped, so we had another – the whole thing is just the Bisping GSP stuff. I wish it had never happened.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that just a lot of the things that have been happening with the UFC lately. I mean, if you're trying to be, and of course, I believe we've had this conversation before, Danny, but if you're trying to be, the NFL of MMA, I mean, we can't have these things continuing to happen. And that brings me to, the women's 125 division. And I don't mean to just jump off of GSP Bisping, but it's fresh on my mind because this was like the worst thing that could have happened. I mean, you come out with a news story that you're going to, start an Ultimate Fighter show and you're going to start a new women's division and you're going to crown a champ or whatever have you. And then you retract that statement, even though you've sent out, copies to all the media of this press release. And then like 5 days later, you're releasing a statement saying, yeah, you know what, we are going to do it. So like, it's just been a crazy week, and I don't understand. I don't know how things like this can really show us in the mainstream as a competent sport. But let's go ahead and get your comment on the women's 125 division as a whole, and then of course the whole incident with it.
I mean, this ties back into a little bit the theme that I was saying with GSP Bisping, like, how did this happen? Like, this should be a good news story that we're celebrating because it's better for female fighters. They're going to be healthier. Like, they're not going to, some aren't going to have to cut as much weight. Some aren't going to have to go up and fight, women who are much bigger than them. Like, it should just be, hey, this is a no-brainer, common sense. The UFC is doing the right thing. And instead, we're talking about how, I know we live in this, Donald Trump bullcrap era where, you can just say whatever you want and claim that it's true. But, I mean, like, why, when they accidentally leaked the news, why didn't Dana just say, hey, we're not ready to talk about it yet. This news is coming. Yeah. We'll have more details in a couple of days. It wasn't meant to leak. Like, isn't that the logical way of dealing with that and just of doing the crisis management? Is just saying, like, hey, give us a couple days to get ready. We'll give you more details. Like, when they finally did roll it out, it's not like Twitter exploded with this news. It wasn't like there was any shock value to it anyways. I don't think that there would have been in the first place had they not done it. Like, it's just really – it's really bizarre. And, I mean, I'm really happy that we have a 125-pound division. I think that there's – Bellator and, I mean, did World Series. Who else – introduced their 125 division recently, because I don't know if there's enough talent right now for those for both organizations to have particularly stacked divisions, so this may be one where we have to have some growing pains for a little while, but I'm pretty okay with that, to be honest. If you have to suffer a little bit for the right thing to be done, so be it, but yeah, I mean, it's another one of those things. I don't know if I'm articulating myself properly, but like, why, like, how do you screw this up?
Yeah. Well, and that you brought up a good point. I mean, maybe they are trying to play both sides of the publicity. You know what I mean? Apparently there's no publicity, good publicity, like publicity, right? And like, there's no bad publicity. So I don't know, man. I because we've talked about this before, and I find that that this new way of the UFC running just doesn't seem to be able to last. You know, in my head, I can't see them continuing on the way that they've been going, and with these mistakes. And I don't know how much of this is getting out to the mainstream media, because Danny, as we know, we are in our own MMA bubble. I don't know how much of this is actually getting to the casual fan or how much it affects them. So maybe let's talk about that. I mean, not to again blaze over the two subjects that we've just started talking about, but just in normal conversation here, you know, what is your opinion on that? Do you think that UFC is trying to play both sides, or?
I think that, to be honest, I mean, with the 125 division thing, I think that they just screwed up. Like, I think it was a mistake. It was human error. And I mean, like, I'm expressing disappointment. And I think that part of why I'm expressing disappointment is, like, mistakes happen. I'm not mad at anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I think either, if anyone's calling for anyone to be fired over this, like, someone pressed send when they shouldn't have. That's all that really happened here. It's just that that's not what we see from professional organizations very often, and I want the UFC to be acting professionally, because frankly I want this stuff to maybe trickle down into the mainstream, because that means the mainstream's paying attention, and I'm not sure the mainstream is paying attention anymore. I don't want to say, like, oh, this stuff wouldn't have happened if all these cuts hadn't been made, because I have no idea. But I think whatever the UFC's been doing in 2017 hasn't really been working. I think that's the larger point here, and I don't exactly know how to answer your question, but it just sort of relates back to what I was saying, which is just like, this should have been a good week. And I will say that on the ground in Dallas, I mean, the fans are showing up in droves. You know, open workouts, looked awesome. They did a workout with Derek Lewis and Rose Namajunas, and that was awesome. So I think on the ground here, this has still been a very good week, and I think that it's going to be a good show, hopefully, that ends with stuff. But like, you just look back at this, it all feels like it's a piece of this weird 2017 puzzle where, you know, like, how did Mousasi and Weidman not end up being a classic fight that we were still talking about this long later, and instead ended up just being a complete debacle? You know, it feels like everything's just kind of like going not as well as it should. And I don't think that is what you want a sporting organization. You know, that's not the vibe you want to be giving off.
Yeah, it's funny because it seems like they're kind of working against themselves. And I just wanted to bring back something that one of our contributors said to me. And he said, you know, it seems like what's going to happen is that, you know, the empire or the new ownership of the UFC is going to kind of run it into the ground, and then the Fertittas are going to come back and they're going to scoop it up and they're going to save it. And then they said this on the CME as well this week. And I thought it would just kind of, it's kind of in the minds, not only of, you know, the hardcore fans, but kind of in the journalists' minds as well. So again, just in the flow of the conversation, what do you think about that idea that because of what we're seeing, and because we have not heard again from anybody in the ownership of the USC, besides Dana White, of what the plan is moving forward, what do you think about that kind of thought?
The thought being that it's time for WMEIMG to come out and, you know, interact a little bit? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not only that, but do you think that in the end, this is just hurting the sport, and maybe the Fertittas can scoop back in like they have done before and rise and take back over the UFC? Do you think it was a plan all along? I don't know. It's kind of a weird thought, but it's just something that came up this week.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but that doesn't mean that I don't like that you're thinking about it and getting enthusiastic about it. I mean, it's a fun idea. I think the Fertittas are pretty happy with their billions of dollars that they can probably invest in something that you know, you buy an NFL team or you buy something like that, and I don't think that you have to be quite as constantly invested in the positive and negative swings as the UFC. So I'm sure that the Fertittas are pretty happy where they are, you know, and this is something I kind of wrote about. I mean, I'm sitting, you know, we're all sitting here being like, where's the star power? Where's the star power? And then at the same time, I'm like talking to Yair Rodriguez and being like, you know what, in 6 months, if this guy is fighting Max Holloway or Jose Aldo and manages to bring in that massive Mexican audience that showed up for Canelo and Chavez Jr. last weekend, then if that Mexican audience shows up, nobody's talking about Conor McGregor. Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating here for the sake of the argument, but like that makes Yair a bigger star than Conor, you know, or at least a more bankable star in the southern United States and the West Coast and Mexico. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be the Fertittas. I think it's just a run of bad luck that is compounded by ultimately some mistakes that they've made. And I think the tide is going to turn. But I wonder if potentially having a man who just made $300 million at the helm and maybe isn't quite as invested as he once was, is more the problem than the Fertittas not being around. But that's just my hot take. And it seems like there's a lack of leadership, and everyone's talking about the Fertittas when I'm not entirely sure that they're the big difference maker here. So,
yeah. It made me think earlier on today that maybe we should have kept on to, you know, a hold of some of them high executives that we were paying a lot of money to that knew what they were doing in this business. Just kind of makes me think we could have saved a couple of them, maybe one or two. You know what I mean?
And it's those guys who were going to crack the whip, right? I mean, I think that you're very right. I mean, you know, in any corporate, you know, buyout, or I'm trying to think what the word I'm using. Just and any time one corporation takes over another, I mean, you want a level of continuity. And yeah, you're probably right about that. But just some of those people who, you know, knew how the UFC machine was oiled, are really being missed right now. But I mean, it's just very frustrating. Like, how did this week happen?
Yeah, it's true. Let's. And over, we're kind of bearing the lead here because the card is so good. But we had a show last night, and they kind of covered the card. And I want to get your comment on the card and you know some of your favorite interviews. But I just wanted to cover some of the news with you, the news and notes real quickly in the start of the show here. And what I would like to do is just put a bow on the whole GSP versus Bisping middleweight division kind of debacle. Because, of course, on Monday, Luke Rockhold did come out on the MMA Hour. Was it this week? Yeah, it was this week. And calling for all the middleweights to go on strike, basically. And, you know, without them, they've got nobody. And that's kind of an idea that we've talked about on this show many times. And probably any of the longtime listeners are either into it or they're just not. So let's put a bow on GSP versus Bisping because – yes, it was a big opportunity for Bisping, and you can feel bad for him all you want. But again, like you said, GSP put it out there. He said he didn't want to fight until October, and that somehow the UFC was trying to push it. Is it because, first of all, is it because Bisping really, really wanted that fight and didn't want to take on the number one contender in Yoel Romero? And secondly, with what Luke Rockhold sent out today, and he's like, okay, UFC, you know, that's great. Let's do some business now. It's good for the middleweight division, right? I mean, it's not going to hold the division up for a long period of time. So this fight falling out is really good for the division.
It's great for the division. And I mean, good on Luke Rockhold. I know he rubbed some people the wrong way. I actually really like the guy, but it got me thinking when he did that, you know, we always talk about this union and, you know, we talk, you know, union or fighters association, and we talk about getting all the fighters involved. Maybe the scariest thing, if you're the UFC, is a couple of the big names in one division getting together and just having a little agreement that they're not going to accept fights. I mean, maybe that's how, you know, the fighters wield power. And I mean, I thought it was brilliant on Rockhold's part. I'm not sure how it would have worked out, but I think it had something to do with it. And I think that if the UFC was going to book this Bisping GSP fight, they had the right to. Bisping, I hate it.
I really hate it. He's got the right to make his money, man. And if there's a big money fight on the table, he had the right for it. The issue was that there was a clear number one contender already there, right? That, like, Yoel Romero, who I can't believe he's become a character of sympathy, but, you know, was getting screwed here. that, like, you had a face to what was wrong, you know? I don't know if that's how you say it, but, like, there was, you could literally say, like, this is the guy getting screwed. You go down, and it wasn't some abstract thing. So this fight was probably doomed from the start. I don't fault them for trying to do it. I fault them for the execution of it. But, you know, just Buck Anderson, GSP, this debate over how huge it would be, let's not debate that. Let's just go ahead, get Romero Bisping booked for presumably July, get Rockhold in there against presumably Musasi, with the winner getting the winner of that one. And there you go. Now we got some fun fights we're talking about. Now we're looking at how the division shakes out and doing what we've always loved doing as fight fans and, you know, playing what if. And that's the fun thing. So, you know, I think we all would have had at the end of the day a lot of fun between with the lead up to Bisping GSP. But, you know, it feels like life's returning to normal a little bit, and we can all just put this in the past. And that's the best thing for the division, and it's also the best thing for, like, you and me, because it's exhausting talking about this shit.
Okay, so like you said, it's the best thing for you and me, and I agree with you. I mean, I'd rather see the division move forward than see these freak show fights that are going to attract, you know, who knows who to the sport, and who knows if they're going to continue to watch the sport. You know what I mean? I find it very puzzling, and this isn't in my notes either. I apologize. This is just seems like we're going to get off my notes here on a tangent. But it just seems to me like the UFC is getting away from what made them good, you know, what made them the best of the best. And I heard this sentiment spoken on another show. I can't remember which one that I listened to. You know, we're really seeing, like, even Raging Al, Iaquinta, you know, asking for his release because he can go make money somewhere else. And the UFC seems to me is losing a lot of its luster. You know what I mean? This is where the best used to fight the best. And now it's where the people come to make the most money. And of course we don't have a lot of stars. So it just seems counterproductive to me to just push these guys down who are speaking up and who are stars. I mean, Iaquinta is, by all accounts, doing a great job for himself speaking out. Luke Rockhold probably did himself a favor by speaking out. So I don't understand why they want to push their stars down. And that brings me to this whole, what we were thinking is the UFC was forcing Damian Maia to take this Jorge Masvidal fight. They pretty much said, you know, you need to take this fight. And you know, Maia was waiting, another guy who was waiting for his title shot. And he's an older fighter. And we just saw Jacare get knocked into the land of wind and ghosts and miss his title shot. So it brings me to this question, like, why are we seeing this Maia Masvidal fight? I know we've talked about this before, but with the whole landscape of what we're talking about and we're, like, you know, down the road, why are we doing this to these guys?
I mean, I think ultimately because the UFC is trying to bring in revenue to pay off the $4 billion just spent. I think it's possible that they, you know, like, you make, and this is silly, but, like, you know, when people make money for the first time, not me, because I still haven't made it, but then they, you know, they get caught up and they change a little bit. Like, I think it's possible that it's like the Conor Ronda thing, the UFC learned certain lessons from that, you know, were about just, you know, you build the one superstar and that, like, and maybe that those couple of years where those two people were going, the UFC thinks that that's where they should always be, as opposed to, you know, maybe we get a run like that every 7 or 8 years and it's fun while it lasts. But at the other times, the great thing about the UFC is typically, you know, they build cards that are 5 fights deep at the very least. So you get a great main card. I don't know. The title, they have to get back to the titles meaning something.
Right.
ultimately, this all comes down to fighter pay. I mean, if every fighter was getting paid enough, the title would purely be, you know, an athletically pure accomplishment that people were striving for, rather than, you know, the key to actually being able to secure your family's financial future. So, so many of these things, in my opinion, just come down to fighter pay. I hate that Maya, you know, if Maya was forced into it, I hate that. What happened to Jacare sucks. Maybe he should have been a little bit more like Rockhold, but Jacare was pretty outspoken originally and didn't get him very far. So what's the solution? I don't know. But, I mean, I think that we've all targeted what we feel is the problem. And I think that maybe not every fan is going to leave, but I think some of those fans who came into the sport fell in love with it, but have a lot going on with their lives, and they're not exclusively MMA people. You know, they watch MMA on a Saturday and football on a Sunday and all that. I mean, some of those people might start tuning into something else on a Saturday night, and it's going to hurt the UFC's bottom line, and maybe that's what will bring it back. I don't know. I mean, it's a complicated question, and I feel like I'm ranting a little bit as opposed to just giving you anything succinct, but that's my answer.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't think the question was very succinct either. So two rants in on top of each other. It's kind of where we're at right now. Okay, let's kind of switch gears a little bit. And I know that we're going to get to the card in a minute, but I want to address the Dana White sending out a poster that didn't have the right fighter on it, like the right picture of the right fighter. I mean, shouldn't the UFC president know that that's not the person who's actually fighting on the card because he knows his fighters? Or, I don't know, shouldn't there be some kind of person who knows what this is? It's like the Jose Aldo thing, right? Remember when that came out with Reebok as well? It just seems like these crazy, stupid things keep happening. Like, shouldn't the UFC president know who's fighting on this card and what they look like?
I mean, it's that or that the president of the company, you know, realistically does have a lot of jobs other than to just promote things on Instagram. Right. And that, you know, Dana White's role is actually a really weird one. And, you know, I mean, like, yeah, of course, the person who the biggest promoter of a fight should be getting it right. I also don't, you know, at the same time, I mean, should the president of the UFC, I don't know what the president of every other organization's role is. This just shouldn't happen. It's so, I mean, it's pretty harmless overall. It's obviously disrespectful to the fighters involved, but I'm pretty sure they got over it. It seems like an innocent mistake that's just an innocent mistake that is compounded by all the other mistakes recently.
All right. So
I'm not going to make too big a deal.
Well, I mean, like you said, if you were the fighters involved, you'd probably make a big deal out of it. And I mean, it would raise another concern for yet another fighter to have a gripe with their employer. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a good thing for anybody in the situation. But let's talk about Henry Cejudo falling off the card, because on last night's show, on Smack My Picks Up show, the word was that, you know, Henry Cejudo was having a hard time with his weight cut. And, you know, before they knew that the fight was off, they were talking about the fight and they made their picks. And then, of course, after the show ended, we heard that, you know, Henry Cejudo was not on the fight card anymore, even though we saw plenty of interviews come out with him looking fine and, you know, no word of any kind of hand injury. So give us a lowdown. You're on the ground. What actually happened?
I mean, from the sounds of it, it was a hand injury. There was absolutely no indication that his hand was hurt during the availability yesterday. I don't, you know, he certainly didn't mention it to anyone in the media as far as I've heard. We at 2 o'clock, 2:30 yesterday afternoon, we're all under the impression that the fight was going on. You know, Sergio Garcia was really, really excellent with the media. So I think that it was actually, this is kind of a personal anecdote, but it was one of those fights that I'd looked at and been like, okay, that'll be cool, and kind of hadn't thought much more of it. And then after talking to Sergio, I'd actually been kind of hyped up to see how it went down. And, you know, it's, you have those moments in every fighter's career where they're you know, taking that step, and I thought that it would be interesting to see how Sergio responded to that. So I was pumped for it. So I was really bummed that it went down this way. I mean, I just you hate when a fight falls out 3 days before like this, and I don't have anything to suggest that it was anything other than a hand, but I had no indication that his hand was hurt at all when I spoke with him.
I'm sorry, just to clear it up, you said Sergio Garcia, but you meant Sergio Pettis, correct?
Yes, my apologies. Definitely not Sergio.
No worries.
I don't know, like golf. Why am I saying Sergio Garcia? Yeah.
Well, he did win the Masters. Recently, I didn't mean Sergio, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't care. I really don't care about golf. I meant Sergio Pettis. That's where it is. Yeah. So, yeah.
I thought you did. I just wanted to clear it up just in case somebody listening was like, oh, he said it wrong. And then, you know, anyways. So let's talk about, instead of moving the Alvarez-Poirier fight to the main card, the UFC decided to move the Jotko Branch fight onto the main card. So explain the thought process behind that decision.
I mean, this is pretty straightforward, to be totally clear. They the prelim main event is Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier. To the best of my understanding, that is something that is negotiated with the television network and probably television networks around the world. So, you know, FX and the UFC would have agreed that Alvarez Poirier would be the preliminary headliner. So it goes out on free TV. They are FX. I haven't watched FX because I don't really know what that channel is, but presumably all week FX is promoting a UFC 211 prelim card that is headlined by Alvarez Poirier. So all their commercials and all that. So while that's obviously a much bigger fight than Christoph, I don't want to say their names or his name, but and David Branch. There's a reason is pretty understandable and justifiable here. So I don't know why people would be getting mad about seeing Alvarez Poirier on free TV, but it's something that, I mean, it's basic business, and it to me makes sense. And I don't think that this is something people should be getting mad at, especially on a card that still features Frankie Edgar and Yair Rodriguez in the second fight of the night. We're getting some really great fights. So this is something that people should just understand that's the way it is, and it's not going to change.
Right. It's something that we say on the show all the time. I mean, you need a good fight. It's going to be, you know, what you think is going to be a good barn burner to lead you into and get you excited about the main card. And and that, yeah, like you said, it is self-explanatory, and you're right. That's usually what I say to people, but you know, some people may have been upset that the former lightweight champion of the world is on the prelims. You know what I mean? How far the mighty have fallen. You know what I mean? So that's kind of why I asked.
Yeah, no, and I get that, and I'm just, I'm not saying it so much towards you, it's just that it's, you know, I always hate when people are talking about sports, and they say, well, you know, it's business, and they chalk it up to business, and, you know, ask you to move on, but in this case, like, it's a very simple and understandable business decision, and, yeah, I'm just encouraging people not to get mad at this one, because Eddie Alvarez seems pretty happy, all things considered, right now. So let's just let Eddie live and not get upset on his behalf.
All right, so let's move on. And I've got a very serious question for you here, Danny, because we're going to move to the main event of this card of UFC 211. Serious question for you here. Does the heavyweight curse strike again?
This is a fight that I've gone back and forth on so many times. I think that, like, if you're picking just purely based on, you know, what these fighters have accomplished over the last couple of years and, you know, who I think that they both are as fighters, I take Stipe. But, like, it's not as if Stipe was particularly convincing against Overeem. Verdum fought a really stupid fight against him, and
I think Junior is a pretty smart guy in the octagon. So I actually like, I think Junior is going to be a test for Stipe that's pretty substantial. So I hate making picks, but this is kind of something I wrote about today, where it's weird how, in a lot of ways, really until this fight was announced, I mean, we all thought Junior was a very good fighter, an elite fighter, but we never really talked about him, you know, since he lost to Cain for the second time. I don't think he was really being discussed as a top 1, 2, or 3 guy in the heavyweight division. And now we're looking at him potentially being champion again. It's sort of incredible, really, that after the better part of 3.5 years on the outside looking in of that super elite level, he's possibly going to become champion again, which I never thought was going to happen after he lost to Cain. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where you stand, but I think it's a really interesting fight that we're going to see Stipe get. Even though I think I lean towards Stipe, I think he's going to be pushed in a way that he hasn't been pushed in his last couple of fights. And it'll just be, you know, it'll be fascinating to see how he responds to that, because I don't think Junior is going to run in there and make an early mistake, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that they covered it last night on the Smack My Picks Up very well. You know, it's all going to come down to whether or not, you know, Junior's time off is going to affect him, and whether or not that, you know, having a new baby is going to affect him. But it's going to be very interesting to see whether or not Stipe can break that curse, because, you know, he's right up against it. And if he can break it, he's pretty much the only one that's been able to do that in that heavyweight division. And, you know, very interesting to see whether or not he can do it. So let's lighten the mood up a little bit more here, because I know you've been on the ground and you've been interviewing fighters. So let's go ahead and get your, who was the best interview so far of the week?
Yeah. Just, I'm just going to say that. Yair Rodriguez, I feel like I'm like that hipster. Like I never talk about it, but like Yair has pretty much been my like top of my number one on my do not miss this man fight list in the UFC since I saw him in Mexico at 188. I know other people, you know, watched him on Tough and all that. I don't watch Tough. I've got other stuff to do in my life. But yeah. I mean, I saw him in Mexico and I just loved him. And, you know, I don't miss his fights. And I think that this is a fascinating moment in his career, because Frankie is definitely the biggest test, but like he hasn't failed that test yet. So this could be that turning point moment where we all look back and say, hey, that's the moment we knew that Yair Rodriguez was, you know, going to be a number one contender or champion for the next 5 or 6 years of his career. I mean, he could be right there. We have no idea how this fight's going to go, but I think Frankie's an incredibly difficult test. But I basically put my mic in there, and I've seen that he was at the Canelo fight last week, and Yair just went off about how he was going to be a bigger star than Canelo. And Yair is normally so humble and so respectful of everyone, but he talked openly about, like, you know, he wants to be a superstar. He didn't talk trash. He talked about how great Canelo was, but he genuinely believes that he can be the biggest, most famous, most popular Mexican athlete in the world, and I loved it. I just loved every second of it. So that was by far my favorite interview of the week.
Excellent. And
it was certainly better than Jorge Masvidal. It was certainly better than Jorge Masvidal, basically just yelling at the media about how we had never supported him for like 7 or 8 minutes. And like, to be honest, I don't know that I've ever really, you know, I'm a newspaper guy. I don't write about every fighter. Like, I was kind of sitting there being like, well, it's true. I've never really written about you, Jorge. So, you know, maybe he was right, but talking to Yair was a lot more fun than talking to Jorge. So.
Excellent. You bring up kind of a trend that has been happening on our shows over the past couple of weeks. And whenever we have a fight card to talk about, over the past couple of weeks, we've kind of had this feeling. And I just want to bring you to the matchmaking that has been happening lately, because of course Mick and of course Sean are in at the controls of the matchmaking nowadays. And
By the way, Mick is a very fantastic person, and so is Sean. I got to meet them at 210. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. But let's talk about the matchmaking, because you brought up the Edgar Rodriguez fight, and it is kind of that, you know, young fighter coming up, old fighter, what can he still be there? And we've seen this a lot lately. We've seen, you know, a lot of matches being like proving, you know, really proving grounds for fighters. Are you going to be able to move up, or are you going to get stifled by that, you know, maybe not journeyman, but that guy that is higher than you in the ranks? I think that they've been doing a very good job as of late, you know, kind of promoting these fights, even though we're complaining about, you know, the divisions not being moving. But I feel like they're doing a very good job of putting good fights in certain places that would appeal to you and me, Danny, like the hardcore fan that are interested in, you know, the ups and downs of the sport.
Totally. And I mean, I don't think that there's any example that's better than this particular fight. I mean, you know, yeah. You and I have talked enough, but like, for me, I mean, the two guys, like, this star power hole, which, to be clear, even if Connor was fighting, would still exist right now, because there's a bunch of cards that don't have Connor on them. But like, I think can be filled right now, obviously, by two guys, one of whom is Yair and the other of whom is Francis Ngannou. And Yair Frankie, I mean, it's perfect matchmaking. It's a huge test. If Yair loses, it doesn't really matter. We're all going to say, well, you're 24, yeah. You still need work. If he wins, then we have a legit superstar who presumably gets the winner of Aldo Holloway. If Frankie wins, he definitely gets Holloway, definitely doesn't get Aldo, depending on the winner. I mean, so it just kind of sets up, assuming this fight's good, it sets up a kind of fun little top four with Cub Swanson hanging around there. It's great matchmaking, and this is, you know, this is what you want. Frankie doesn't want to be a stepping stone. I think it's rude of us to imply that Frankie would be anything other than a stepping stone. I think that this is probably a number one contenders fight that we're just not quite ready to call it that, because we're not sure Yair is ready, but we'll know after this fight, and that's great. This is probably my fight of the year, unless the featherweight division gives me another really cool fight with Yair and Max Holloway. So I love it. I everything you're saying, I agree with. So I'm just using the long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah. So I chose this as my spotlight fight of the night, and of course on this show we're not allowed to pick a spotlight fight of the night from the main card, but I just had to say, like, I don't see any other fight that it is so important and that could possibly turn out to be three rounds of probably the best MMA we've ever seen. Not that I don't appreciate Tony choosing the Vic Reyes fight for me as my spotlight fight of the night. I that's going to be an awesome fight also. But I just think that Edgar Rodriguez fight, if it turns out to be what we think it is, as you said, Danny, could just be, like you said, the fight of the year for sure.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating. I mean, Yair is much longer than Frankie. So, and he's really quick. So, you know, as much as you got to kind of lean towards Frankie, or like just because of, you know, what we've seen from them over their careers, I mean, how does Frankie deal with having to get inside? Like, it's fascinating. There's just everything about it. If you like MMA, this is just a really awesome fight. And, you know, there's others I happen to not like. I think that Alvarez Poirier is going to be a disappointment. Yeah. But, yeah, there's a lot of others, but there's nothing better than that one.
All right, so if I had to put you on the spot and say to you, we agree that that's probably going to be the best fight of the night. Let's get a spotlight fight of the night from the prelims for you. Just something else that you may be looking at that we're missing. You know what I mean? As a journalist that covers the MMA scene, what are you looking forward to? Spotlight fight of the night, not on the main card.
And you've already gone with the Polo Reyes fight, right?
Yeah.
So I got to kind of avoid that, because, like, Polo Reyes is a madman.
You don't have to.
I mean, like, The James Vick Polo Reyes one is, I think that fight has all the potential to just be absolutely nuts.
Can we just kind of go with that and accept that I'm a little bit. Yeah.
Like, absolutely. I think it is. Again, why give you more?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. I want to give you a different one, but I mean, truthfully, like, that's kind of what I got. I've been in Africa for a month. I haven't been digging deeply into Chase Sherman's history.
Right.
So that's kind of, I kind of have to go with that. And I mean, the way that these fight cards kind of work is that when it is, and I mean, I'd say that there are six or seven really good fights, but especially when Cejudo and Pettis was on this, you know, you really were focusing as a reporter who has my job, which I have two pages in the newspaper every day to fill. I'm really, really focused on those big fights, unless there's something that totally catches my eye. So I haven't had to focus on the prelims and the early prelims all that much. So, you know, I'm making up an excuse here, but that's what it is. I appreciate you understanding and forgiving me for that. Everyone.
No, understood. Like I said, I wasn't mad at Tony for giving me the Vic Reyes fight because, again, I'm very intrigued about that. I'm also intrigued about the Skelly Knight fight. And, of course, we understand that, you know, you're writing for the paper and that you are covering the, you know, the more mainstream-friendly fights, and that's fine. I just thought I'd challenge you a bit because they came at me a little bit last night. I'm going to be honest with you, okay? They came at me a bit last night. Tony came at me, and he said, hey, I'm not going to let Proteus get away with choosing the Edgar Rodriguez fight, so I just wanted to comment on it because I know Tony's listening, and it's all in good fun, you know? It's all in good fun.
Yeah,
and
of course.
It's gonna be, that Vic Reyes fight is going to be great.
Yeah, no, and, you know, a lot of these can be great. What's the next question? Because I feel like I don't want to.
Let's move on.
anymore. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're approaching an hour anyways. And we're going to start wrapping up anyways. But let's talk real quickly because, you know, Branch and Jotko was moved up to that main card spot, like we said, the curtain jerker. What do you think about Branch coming back? You know, dominating in the World Series of Professional Fight League, and then moving back over into the UFC. What against, you know, as they discussed last night on Smack My Picks Up, a very tough test in Jotko. I think this fight could be very intriguing also to see. You know, Branch was a two division, you know, belt holder in the whatever we're calling it now. What do you think about his chances in the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, he legitimately, you know, his run in World Series was insane. And, you know, why wouldn't you want to see him in the UFC at this point? And he's 35, so from his perspective, now's the time to do it. It's kind of always interesting. He's been gone more than 6 years. But I don't want these guys from World Series or Bellator when they do make the move over. You know, chances are, you know, Shelby has a better idea than I do of how they match up with guys. And, you know, you look at Eddie Alvarez, they threw him in the deep end. And I like that the UFC doesn't, you know, respects those other organizations, even if they won't publicly admit it, enough to say, hey, man, like, you did really well. We're giving you to a top guy. We're testing you. We're challenging you. That's what I want. And, you know, more power to David Branch if he can put together a couple wins. I mean, I'm not going to hate on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Okay, one last question before I let you go. Well, you know, I'm probably going to ask another one. But another World Series of Fighting fighter has come over. Another champ in Justin Gaethje, and we're hearing a lot about what he's getting paid. And I know you've just come back from the continent of Africa, and you might not be completely up to speed. But let's say that Gaethje fights Michael Johnson in his first fight. Do you think Michael Johnson is going to be okay with the guy moving over from the World Series of Fighting making probably a lot more money than he is?
I mean, I think that this is an interesting one because this is a question that, you know, fighters on a certain level are going to have to, you know, continue to ask themselves, because if it's being proven time and again that, you know, you can go and build your skills in another organization, which, you know, oftentimes if you're at that level, you're just breaking into the UFC, you can get more money from other companies. But, you know, if these guys are going, establishing themselves and then getting paid more than a guy like Michael Johnson, I mean, is Michael Johnson not sitting there and thinking like, maybe I shouldn't have gone into the UFC at the point of my career when I did, because I could have gone, you know, beaten some lesser opponents, padded my record a little bit, and then come over and gotten more money. And then that's what he's going to tell the guys in the gym. So, look, I'm never – if I'm Michael Johnson, am I going to be pissed about that? Yeah. But I also think that there are longer-term implications to that sort of action by the UFC, where prospects may decide that they're better served fighting 5 or 6 fights in another organization before they pop over to the UFC, because they know that the payday is going to be the same, if not more, if they go on a run outside of the organization.
And yeah, I agreed. I mean, it's probably not great for Michael Johnson, but I mean, it's good to see Gaethje come over, get paid and test himself and hopefully not lead with his chin against Michael Johnson, because you know what? That might not end out very well for him. Okay, so let's get you.
Nah, man, Michael Johnson could knock anybody out.
That's okay. It. Absolutely. If you want to keep talking about it, go ahead.
No, I don't have that much more to say about it, to be honest. And I'm really pretty hungry, so I'm going to go get some Mexican. And sorry, Justin Gaethje. I said what I had to say about you, and yeah, that's the plan.
Let's move on.
I got early wagons, right, so, which I'm actually going to try to go to tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Like that? I don't always go to early weigh-ins because from a newspaper perspective, like, but I'm going to try to go tomorrow, I think. I'm having it.
That sounded like a confident answer there. I'm going to try to go, I think.
Well, it all depends. Like, basically, I'm going, I mean, since this is what we want to talk about, and this is what the listeners want, I'm going for Mexican instead of going and meeting other reporters so that I can get to bed early, because I'm still a little bit jet-lagged from my 30-hour flight a week ago, and I'm basically talking myself into this plan that I've come up with while we were talking, and I'm doing it over the phone, so yeah, that's my plan.
All right. Well, I appreciate your confidence and your willingness to avoid the going out and get to bed early. I appreciate that because,
yeah,
let's be honest, I'm not always the best one to do that. I'm always, you know, a big fan of having a couple of sugar dib dabs or, you know, frosty beverages, as we call them over here.
No doubt.
Anyways, let's move on. Twitter follow of the week.
All right.
I want to get some Twitter follow of the week from you, because you're a very smart guy. What is your Twitter follow of the week? Do you have one?
Whew, just someone who I'm recommending following on Twitter right now.
Yeah.
Wow. Who have I followed?
Other than Wells, of course, because he's got his new podcast come out. Other than Wells.
Let's see. Who is worthwhile following right now? I mean, you guys know all my friends on the beat, so I'm trying to, like, give a shout-out that's not, like, Morgan or Cold Coffee or
right.
Or Wells. You know what? You know who's a good follow? I don't know if you've ever had him on the show, but I was out with him last night, and he's another newspaper guy, so, you know, brings a slightly different perspective than some of the hardcore guys. But if you don't follow Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, he's a must-follow. He's one of the smartest guys covering the sport. And he's hilarious, and this is a really, really good, smart guy who, you know, this isn't maybe the most original, and, you know, this is an off-the-beaten-path. But if you are looking for someone who really, really knows the sport and has some fun with it, too, that's going to be – I'm going to go with that. So give a shout-out to one of the boys. That's how I roll around here.
That's how you roll. Okay, now you're on a plane for 30 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, you should ask him. Absolutely. You were on a plane for 30 hours, so give us the song of choice for long journeys on the way out.
The song of choice. To be honest, like, here's the thing with really long journeys is, like, I'm a combination of, like, I'm not cool. And I think I maybe even said this on a podcast before. Like, I basically listen to, like, Drake and Fleetwood Mac. Like, that's like on a day-to-day basis, if you see me walking around, that's what I'm listening to.
Give me a good Drake song, because I don't listen to him. Even though I'm from fucking Canada, I don't listen to him. And even though you're from Canada, I don't listen to him. So give me a Drake song, then.
I mean, go with Passion Fruit right now. It's the summer. It's in Dallas. It's hot. Passion Fruit's the hit right now, and that's it. But I'll also say that I just kind of downloaded a bunch of Van Morrison albums, and that was what I listened to mostly on the plane, because 30 hours is hell, and Van Morrison just, like, calms me right down. So that was kind of the soundtrack of my trip more than anything. That'll be my answer. Mystic, what's it called? Mystic Night, I believe, is that was, like, my favorite song when I was completely delirious and about to kill Delta Airlines staff.
All right, Danny, go get some Mexican. Avoid Morgan and cold coffee, because they will drag you down into the party hole. You will have to have frosty beverages and Fireball.
You say that, and yet I was out with those guys last night, and at 11:45, I was like, I'm really tired. And we were at Cold Coffee's Airbnb, and John Morgan was like, me too, and fell asleep right where he was sitting, and we all were in bed by midnight. So we're getting old, man. We're getting old.
Yes, and of course, Morgan has had his son in town, his family in town all week. And of course, we saw those wonderful shots from the open workouts today with his son and JDS, so... Shout out, Junkie Nation. Anyways, Danny, get out of here. I got to close the show. Thanks very much, hey, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy. You bet. Cheers, man. Thanks so much.
Good to have you back, brother. Bye. All righty. That was Danny Austin, of course, of the Calgary Sun. If you're not following Danny Austin on Twitter, you should. @DannyAustin_9. Of course, he's followed this other sports, other than MMA. But that's okay. He's eclectic. Maybe he's a good follow. I don't know. He says he's a nerd, but I don't believe him. I think he's a pretty cool guy. I hope you all went, wah! I love ending the show with this. It just makes sense for me. Okay, guys, listen. I thank you all for tuning in. Listen, we were supposed to have Showtime on the show, you know, but he's working. He's a hard worker. He's out on the streets of the United States of America. He can't always do hold the line for us. I'm hoping that tomorrow maybe we can get him on and do hold the line. I don't know, because I really like Showtime and I really appreciate him coming on and you know, telling us and educating me on how to bet on MMA. So, guys, if I don't get Showtime on tomorrow, pay attention. We'll have a recap coming up on Sunday, This Week in MMA. And, of course, I'm going to fire back at Marco from Waco, Texas, from last night. Man, I'm not listening to the Big Brown Breakdown. Nah, man, I'm listening to Dan Tom. Dan Tom's got the best breakdowns in MMA at MMA Analyst. Follow Dan Tom on Twitter. He's getting around, Dan Tom. Not only is he on Junkie, but he's on other people's shows now. He's getting around. I tell you what, that boy is breaking out. He's a big star. And we appreciate it because he's a junkie. He's going to be at the gathering. Listen, I appreciate everybody that's going to the gathering. I wish I could be there. I wish I could be in Dallas, Texas. And I got it right that time. Not Austin, Texas. Listen, pay attention to @PandoraBox with 2 X's. Not 1 X, 2 X's. She's going to be doing some vlogs. She's going to be doing some pictures. She's going to send it out, all the pictures with all the fighters. I don't like to do that, but Pam's going to get into that. And you know, guess who else is down there in Dallas, Texas? Lerone, our boy. Down there, I asked him to call into the show, but haven't seen any. He's probably partying. Those mean streets of Dallas, Texas have just taken over. He's focusing on getting some barbecue. That's probably what's happening. When we were in Buffalo together for UFC 210, all that boy wanted to do was get wings. Get wings, get wings, get wings. Anyway, I'm talking too much. This is outro is too long. So let's get out of here. Thank you, DJ Tony. Thank you, Marco from Waco, Texas. Thank you, Pam Dorabox, for doing the pick show last night. I appreciate you filling in and understanding that life sometimes gets in the way, as we like to say on this show. It was a very rough night for me, and I appreciate you guys filling in. Thank you very much. You did a great show. I'm going to get out of here because I've been talking way too much. I have, haven't I? I've been talking way too much. Anyways, rate, subscribe. Give us 5 stars. We'd appreciate that. We really would. Because we need the numbers, as Marco said yesterday, and he yelled at you. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to call you any bad names either. But that's where Marco went. And you know what? We have to respect him. We do. Because he's an all-star. He's a star of this show. Anyways, guys, thanks very much. Love you all very much. Have a great night.